Is this thing on? I'm registering.
So am I, I think. Yeah. Yeah, we're both registering. Right, okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, right,
what
let's
are we
go.
Talking about?
Got a list here.
Alright, I'm not expected to know anything.
No.
I'll be the Eric Morecambe to Jeroeny Wise.
Okay. Alright.
I'll be the Jesse Pinkman to your Walter White. Actually, that's quite
good. What are you taking a pop at the glasses here?
No.
Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name's Matt Christie and I'm joined for the first time, I believe, in 4 weeks.
It's been so long.
By John Dennan. John, how is everything going?
Good. I don't know how you managed to carry on without me.
I had to bin you when Nassim Hamid agreed to come in and do the podcast.
That is whack.
But no, it's good to have you back on. There's a few... It is kind of a quiet period in boxing at the moment, but one senses that there's a lot of big things kind of bubbling under the surface. One of them is the obvious Mayweather-Pacquiao on-off story, which Eric Armitt has blogged about this week. And he compared the nature of the story to some Tarte Snickers.
It's a very earthy simile, I thought.
Yeah. So, do read Eric's blog. Eric has been in and around the game a lot longer than many, many people, and his opinion is one that I greatly respect. And if you haven't had a chance yet to read his blog, which is called Snips and Snipes, do so. He also does a weekly results roundup, which is insane, which is anything between 5 and 10,000 words, which a little bit shorter than my dissertation that I believe I spent about 6 months on, but Eric Armitt does this shit every Sunday night, I believe. So anyway, moving on. So first of all, let's go back to what happened last week. Not a great deal of action, but one guy that did catch my eye, one guy that I am keeping an eye on, is Dillian White. He was out for a while with obviously issues around some illegal substances in his system, which he believes he had no prior knowledge of taking. One is inclined to believe him. But welcome addition to an already bouncing British heavyweight scene, am I right?
Yeah, no, it would be good to see him advance and get up there in the mix. If it was an accident that he took this nutritional supplement that made him test positive, then, you know, he's done his time and, you know, he's done quite a relatively lengthy ban if it was accidental. So I think we can forgive him. Though he does have an inglorious track record. He got slung out of the amateurs because he'd had more kickboxing bouts, I think, or even professional kickboxing bouts that hadn't been sort of declared and was a bit unfair.
What are you saying? He's a wrong'un?
I'm not saying he's a wrong'un. I'm saying he has made either mistakes or crimes, but he's been punished for them.
Right.
So I'm not saying he's a wrong'un.
His name has almost got bigger alongside that of Anthony Joshua's because of a fight they had many moons ago in the amateur ranks when Joshua was far cruder and more raw version of what he is now. But that still is a big selling point if they do ever get to meet, isn't it, down the line?
Yeah, it's a good, great selling point for the fight, you know, and if that happens, it would be an exciting fight. It would be an exciting build-up to it because it's got that bit of backstory. It would have no bearing on the contest itself because, you know, Dillian was a kickboxer, much more experienced at combat sports. And he fought Joshua, and Joshua's like second bout. So Joshua's a novice against a guy with a bit of experience. So that kind of level, that long ago, it's as a result, it's sort of meaningless. But as a story, you know, if Dillian White's still dining out on it, it's a good story. And the two have like crossed paths since. I think they were both on a Klitschko training camp, so they're both up there. I doubt they sparred each other. I think they're both there to spar Klitschko. But Joshua said that they spoke as men do, whilst they were. I don't know what that means, but that's.
Do you rate Dillian White as a fighter?
Well, I saw him as a pro years ago, you know, before this ban. I did expect to see more. However, I think his time out of the sport has been well spent, so he's probably improved a lot since then.
I haven't seen him since he came back. I did see him ringside a few times before the ban, and I always liked what I saw. I think it was before there was too much fanfare around him, though, because it was kind of building, wasn't it, before the ban. I think, like what you said when we first started the conversation, it'll be interesting to see how Dillian White copes as the level of opposition increases. But the Brazilian that he fought, Marcelo Nascimento, is that how you pronounce that?
Totally.
He wasn't expected to win that fight, but he might have been expected to go the distance, and never been beaten that convincingly. We can kind of get a little bit too carried away if we allow ourselves to. But I think for me, that the main thing is that Dillian White's back. Like you said, he's served his punishment, and he does join. And if I give you some names here, it is looking like a good, really nice British scene. Tyson Fury, obviously. Huey Fury as well. Derek Chisora, David Price, Joshua, obviously. Gary Cornish as well, who I suspect is being flattered perhaps by his rather glossy stats.
But again,
he's someone to throw in there. All of a sudden, you know, there's some really nice. David Haye potentially? Did I say that?
If he does come back. Apparently, he's sprinting on sand dunes, according to his Twitter this morning.
On sand dunes.
Yeah.
Well, Chris Eubank Jr. was sprinting on pebbles of Brighton and Hove Beach, and somehow hurdling all the groins because he wasn't coming off the beach in order to get all the way down towards the pier and beyond the marina, he was saying.
I was sprinting over knives.
Okay, so that's the British heavyweight scene kind of sewn up for now. Welcome Dillian White. We'll move on to this weekend. There's an interesting fight at lightweight. Stephen Ormond against Terry Flanagan. There's also an interesting fight at light middleweight. Brian Rose kind of boozing away in Last Chance Saloon against Carson Jones.
Boozing away in Last Chance Saloon.
It really is, though. Lose that and he's out. He's more or less said that himself. I think he said some comments which have kind of, I know, rubbed a few people up the wrong way in that he's saying that he's kind of beyond domestic level. He won't be going back there, whereas I think there has been a few opinions in that following the loss to Demetrius Andrade, given the nature of it, given the emphatic and one-sided nature of it, that if there was anywhere for him to go, it would be back to domestic level.
Plus, do you consider Liam Smith domestic level? Because Smith-Rose, that would be a great fight.
It would be a good fight. It would be a really good fight, and I think Smith needs a fight like that now. But let's focus on what's going to happen rather than what might happen. So let's start with Brian Rose and Carson Jones. It's not an easy fight for Brian Rose. It would be even tougher, I think, if it was in Carson's natural weight class. He is moving up from welterweight to light middleweight. But we saw not so long ago that when motivated, he's capable of causing a surprise. Pushed Kell Brook all the way. Kell Brook's toughest fight of his career, I would say. Perhaps Sean Porter may have been, but certainly with the level of punishment, the amount of punches he took, he seems to take more against Carson Jones. Can he come and upset Brian Rose, do you think?
He certainly can do. I wouldn't bet on it, though. I'd consider Rose the favourite in this one. With Rose, his certain attributes are excellent. Like he's renowned for his jab. What is he the best? Has he got the best jab in Britain? I don't know. You could argue that, but you know that alone isn't enough to take him to that sort of higher level, to take him into world class. But then, you know, is Carson Jones good enough really to get past the jab and give him trouble? Maybe at times, but I think it's going to be a good fight and at times uncomfortable for Rose, but I think Brian will win. Plus home advantage, I think, counts for a big deal.
Given the nature of his lost to Andrade, which, like I said, it was one-sided. In all honesty, he was outclassed in those seven rounds. How difficult a sell is it to kind of put him in another world title? Say if he was to beat Jones, is it beyond even Eddie Hearn to kind of get him a world title shot on the back of that?
Well, it might not be beyond him, but it would be unlikely that he'd get a second shot. I think he needs to do more than just beating Carson Jones to get back up there. You need to start getting people believing in him again. So he needs to be beating those sort of recognised or vaguely recognised names.
Because he wasn't really, and I hope that people don't think I'm being disrespectful to Brian Rose. I've really enjoyed watching him over the last few years and everything that he's done, real determination and real ability there. But was he even a legitimate top 10 contender beforehand? I know that he'd kind of earned the shot, but would say if people were going to get right out there, their kind of mythical top 10 light middleweight standings, would Brian Rose have been a universal choice to make it into all of them? Do you know what I mean?
Because I suppose he got the wins he needed to get him ranked, but he didn't beat the sort of, you know, a gatekeeper type like Carson Jones was at welterweight to get himself up there. So you could say he was lucky to get that opportunity. But there have been underdogs who have gone on to win. It's just he was a massive underdog who lost comprehensively.
Yeah, he did. He did lose. The thing on his side as well that we haven't mentioned is that Demetrius Andrade has certainly got that bit of specialness about him, hasn't he? If you feel that he could go on, if he's kind of takes the correct path, he could go on to be, you know, one of the game's pound for pound leaders, because he does seem to have that about him. You look at the light middleweight titleist though. I mean, the obvious one that you could aim at in terms of would have the best chance of defeating would probably be old Cornelius Bundridge, would it be?
Yeah, I'm surprised K9's still around.
God, I love K9 though.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. So anyway, sorry, so your prediction for Rose Jones would be?
It would be a points victory for Brian Rose.
Points victory is probably the safest bet, isn't it? Particularly given that Rose, he doesn't stop that many people, does he?
No.
Carson Jones, fairly tough, even though he's moving up in weight. Points victory seems safe.
But he's not, you know, Brian's not invulnerable. I was ringside when he got, you know, that sort of, frightening knockout that he suffered against Max people, which just came out of the blue.
Yeah.
That seems to be a long, long way behind him.
Uh-huh.
But he's not, you know, there's going to be, even if he's, you know, winning the rounds as they go, there's going to be that sense of danger that'll keep it interesting to watch.
Okay, so we'll put our mortgage on Rose to win on points, but a cheeky fiver we should put on Carson Jones with a Hail Mary knockout at some point, should we?
But I'm sort of crazy with my finances, so I'm putting everything on the Carson Jones knockout, but a fiver on Rose on points, just, you know, in case when I'm homeless I need to buy a coffee.
Okay, Stephen Ormond against Terry Flanagan. Real industry scrap, isn't it? It's the one that will really appeal to the purists and those that know their boxing. Stephen Ormond turned professional over in America. I believe he had four or five fights out there. Always like what I see with Stephen Ormond. I like the way he boxes. Flanagan, not quite so polished.
Very dangerous, Flanagan.
But extremely dangerous. I, in all honesty, am really, really struggling to pick a winner here. I remember when I first saw Stephen Ormond, and this is going back, I don't know, it must be going back 5 years or more, and at that point I thought that Ormond had it within him to go on to be a world champion. So perhaps due to that loyalty of sorts, that's probably not the right word, but perhaps due to that I would lean towards Ormond to do the business. But what's your take on it, Craig?
I suppose I'd lean towards Flanagan. The times I've seen him recently, I thought Flanagan looked really difficult to beat, but you know, this is it's a 50-50 fight, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Ullman's probably just as dangerous as well. But just, you know, looking at Flanagan, I just think he's going to be quite hard to beat. You can make a case that, you know, Flanagan's not as celebrated as Kevin Mitchell or Derry Matthews, but is he the best lightweight in the country?
It's a good question. It's a good question, but he would need to beat the likes of Stephen Ormond, obviously, wouldn't he? To go on and prove that. But, I mean, the winner of this fight, I think this one is for the... Let me check before I say it out loud. In fact, I was going to say it out loud. Isn't it the WBO European title or something like that? Or is it Eliminator? Anyway, it is.
It's for something important. Something's going to happen.
It's an Eliminator of sorts within the WBO, isn't it?
There's a clear what happens next for the winner, as in it puts this winning this will put them in line to challenge for the WBO title, which is expected to, you know, and that shot is expected to happen later this year. Because I think everyone thinks Terence Crawford is going to move up in weight.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's particularly desperate to fight Terence Crawford.
No, I mean, I haven't got the WBO ratings to hand. It would be interesting to see them, actually. I mean, I think, say, for example, Crawford wasn't to move up in weight, it would be a ridiculous jump into world title waters for either of them, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But I think a vacant title could be a little more favourable, a little more shallow, as it were. So basically you're picking Flanagan.
I'm picking Flanagan, but what do I know?
You know, you're quite good with your picks. You're quite good. So
that is,
you're picking Flanagan. So we've got Rose on points. John Dennon says Flanagan.
I'll go points again.
Okay, so 2 points decisions for John.
What does Matt Christie say?
I don't say.
I just
make you talk.
You are inscrutable.
No, I think I'm inclined. Heart says Ormond, head perhaps Flanagan, but I'm going to stick with Ormond. I'm going to go with Ormond on points.
He's a hard hitter, isn't he, Ormond?
Yeah, not like concussive, but you know he is good. And I think I'll agree with Brian Rose as well.
I spoke to John O'Carroll after he won Prize Fighter.
Yeah,
he was saying he'd been sparring with Ormond, and he was talking about, you know, how heavy his punches were and how helpful that sparring was.
Yeah.
So, it's a fight. It's on.
It is
Something's
a fight.
Something's going to happen.
Okay, let's move on to the next subject, which is, I think we should talk about Billy Joe Saunders. Now, Billy Joe, I think, has been waiting for a title shot certainly since last year. He was already mandatory, I believe, heading towards mandatory when he fought Chris Eubank Jr. There was a lot of talk then that he was taking a risk by fighting Chris Eubank Jr. Won that fight, very good fight. Since then, it's kind of been Andy Lee will now be fighting Peter Quinn on April 11th, is it?
Yeah.
In Brooklyn?
April 11th in Brooklyn.
So Billy Joe initially was, okay, I'll wait for that. He was paid step-aside fee by the WBO. Then this week, IBF came forward and said they need a opponent for Hassan and Dam. It was supposed to be Felix Sturm. Felix Sturm turned it down, I believe, because he's campaigning at super middleweight.
Yeah. And Sturm, interestingly, Abraham was talking about fighting Sturm after Paul Smith, which is a massive fight in Germany.
Would be huge in Germany. That would be huge. But now Billy Joe Saunders has turned his back on the IBF, reading between the lines, and I am reading between the lines. I suggest it's something to do with that step-aside fee from the WBO. Do you think he's doing the right thing in hanging around and waiting for the W? Because I think without a shadow of a doubt, Billy Joe Saunders, Andy Lee would be huge, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be huge. However, Peter Quillen is no gimme for Andy Lee, is
he?
That is 50-50 being kind to Andy Lee?
I'd be inclined to pick Andy Lee for that fight,
right?
Just because, you know, that victory against Korobov, that's a statement.
and it doesn't reflect well on Peter Quillen that he backed off from defending his title, he vacated his title rather than fight Khabib for a supposed big fight.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I suppose, well, maybe Andy Lee in, you know, in America is bigger than Khabib, but I don't know.
It's
maybe
not the way you, it's not the way you do things, though, is it? You don't relinquish your world title and then hang around and wait for the next leader to come along and then challenge him and then hope that that's a bigger fight. Obviously, there was something went very wrong in the background there with Peter Quinn's decision to relinquish the title.
Yeah, or yeah, greater politics probably at play, but we're not. It's just boxing, though. Politics is a podcast.
True. Very true. But
so I can't even start talking about the general election.
So anyway, do you think that Billy? Nice one. Do you think that Billy Joe Saunders is doing the right thing by hanging around and waiting for the winner of Quillen Lee? I would. My opinion was that although I like Hassan and Dam as a fighter, very exciting, very explosive, I thought that I would have picked Billy Joe to beat him, Dam, to be honest.
I'm surprised he's not taking that fight, because I would have thought, you know, if you get paid to step aside from your WBO title fight, and then a shot at the IBF is laid in front of you, that's a sort of great result. And you don't want to miss too many chances of the world title, do you? So there may be more information that's relevant to this than we know. But on the face of it, it's an odd decision not to go for the IBF. So it seems like the wrong move. But I suspect, on the flip side of that, Billy Joe is young. I think he does need, you know, he's got talent, he's got great abilities, but there is more that he needs to do to become world class. I think the fight against Eubank Jr. showed that. So being patient isn't going to hurt his development as a boxer, but it's a big call not to go for a world title when you could.
No, it really is. It really is. But I mean, you know, like you say, he is young, and I'm sure his chance will come. It's always a bit of a risky business, though, when you're waiting on the outcome of another fight.
Yeah.
You know, what if Andy Lee, Peter Quillen's an absolute barn burner? It ends really controversial decision. The whole world wants to see part two. Then what does the promoters do? Then what does the WBO do? Do they give Andy Lee a bit more cash and step aside again? It's all a little bit. As much as you're told these things, it doesn't always work out the way that you've been told. So I just hope, for Billy Joe Saunders' sake, who, in this day and age, certainly not when there was just one world champion per division, but what Billy Joe Saunders' body of work and what he's done over the last few years, given the rest of the middleweights out there, he certainly deserves a shot at world glory. So I'd like to see it all work out for him. And I think, you know, he's fighting someone in Andy Lee who has shown that it doesn't have to happen overnight. These things can take time before you reach the pinnacle.
And also, I think it's different in his situation. I think when you're on the way up, it is different to once you've actually got the world title. As in, I think when you're developing and building and working your way up there, you can be selective about what fights you take or when you take what fights you eventually take. When you're actually a champion, I think you really ought to be back yourself to fight anyone out there. So I think it's a bit different. Billy's Joe working his way towards a world title, saying, "All right, this is the you know his team saying this is the right fight at this time," than Quillen confusingly vacating his WBO.
I agree. That's well put. Yeah,
you've got to fight. Who's available?
That's a good way of putting it. Okay, let's move on to. We just touched on Chris Eubank Jr. Now, people out there that generally just listen to the podcast and don't get involved in the magazine, you know, obviously that's up to you, but absolutely implore you, and this isn't some kind of bad marketing drive, this is the truth, I implore you to get this week's issue, even if it is just for the absolutely fascinating, engrossing feature with Chris Eubank Senior, expertly penned by the one and only Don McRae. Have you had a chance to read this yet?
I'm saving it.
You're saving it. I was going to ask you what would be your favourite Eubank senior quote that's tucked away within this article.
I'll tell you that.
There's quite a few to choose from.
If he does implement the correct principles, then Golovkin cannot live with him. Chris Eubank Senior and Chris Eubank Junior.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't new news, the fact that Chris Eubank Senior is picking his son to beat Gennady Golovkin.
I thought you were about to say it's not new news that Eubank Junior would beat Golovkin.
I mean, he's the level of he's still completely certain that his son will go on, but it's will go on to become a world champion. But if you look hard enough, there are clues of a few doubts there. But Eubank Senior, at his most quotable, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to listen to this conversation. Kind of the setting of where it all took place is also fascinating. You know, something else that Eubank Senior says is, "I am a strong father. He is shaped by my parenting. It has turned him into a predator." It's things like that that make this article, you know, it's one of the best that I've read in quite a while, and well worth the cover price alone. So yeah, everybody do read that. I mean, I think we have spoke probably after the Saunders fight. We spoke about Eubank Jr. Perhaps at the announcement of his next fight, Dmitry Chudinov. Eubank Jr. is certainly a welcome addition to British boxing. If not just for the fact that it's brought Chris Eubank Sr. back into the limelight. Yeah. But let's talk about this relationship with Eubank. I don't think we've discussed this. Eubank Sr. and Eubank Jr. ultimately, is Eubank Sr. a hindrance? Despite all this fun and games and how much it's entertaining us at this stage, is Eubank Sr. a hindrance on Eubank Jr.?
It just does seem the way it is. Like,
I can't imagine them separating. You know, maybe Eubank Senior should stay outside of the ropes during the fight itself. But, you know, they just, you know, like it or not, the two of them seem to be going their own way. And that you know, Senior is sort of made him what he is, certainly in marketing terms, certainly in getting him to the level he's already got at. Senior talking him up has got him to that big fight with Billy Joe Saunders, and you know, Junior actually did pretty well in it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think what you say something there which is absolutely crucial in all this. A lot of people do say that Eubank Senior is kind of hindering what his son's going on to do, but ultimately, if Chris Eubank Senior wasn't his father, he wouldn't be where he is today. He wouldn't be getting all these opportunities, yeah. You know, and that's a fact.
And but he can fight as well. Like, he showed that against Saunders, and he's been sparring top guys. He's sparred Frotch. He's at Gallagher's gym at the moment, sparring Paul Smith ahead of Smith's world title fight. So
I mean, it's interesting you say that, and I hope you don't mind me bringing this up. But I remember when Chris Eubank Junior turned professional, and there was quite a lot of publicity behind that. It was on the undercard of a Tyson Fury fight, I believe. It was televised, and it was all a bit of circus is probably too strong a word, but in terms of the way that we had simply the best being played, that we had Eubank Junior in gold shorts, you know, the sight of Ronnie Davis again leading someone out, and we also could see that Eubank Senior was there. But I remember you personally, John. Not saying for one second you was a hater, but you were a little bit careful about getting overexcited about Eubank Jr., shall we say.
Yeah, I just didn't think he was very good.
Have you been converted?
Yeah. Like, at the start, I just didn't think he was that great. Early on in his professional career, he was throwing lots of light shots that were sort of quick, but pattering off his opponents. I'd seen it, you know, I hadn't seen much of him in the amateurs because he hadn't done much as an amateur. And from what I'd seen him at the Haringey Box Cup, and he wasn't exactly a destroyer of men. I mean, he won his bouts, but he hadn't beaten anyone of note. So I was pretty bemused at all the hype because I just didn't think he was that great. And then I think I was at a show. I think it was a relatively small Mick Hennessy won, maybe at Blue Water or something like that. And poor old Ribchev the Fish got absolutely battered by Eubank Jr. And so I guess I hadn't really followed him that closely since seeing him early on.
The Fish got battered.
The Fish got battered.
Like it, brilliant.
So I saw him then, and he looked like he had actually, you know, been developing, you know, quickly. He looked like he could do some damage in the ring. And then I saw him before the Billy Joe Saunders fight. It was like a tune-up against a journeyman in Liverpool. And he was just he seemed crazy, as in he'd just sort of stand there not moving while waiting for the other guy to come towards him.
I remember that fight,
Then, like, you know, throwing massive haymakers. But, you know, I have to concede it was entertaining. So, yeah, I've been converted. I wasn't a hater. I'm not a lover now.
Okay. No, I didn't say you're a hater. I didn't say that. I did use the word hater, but I think I used it in order to say you were not one.
All right.
But anyway, no. I mean, I think that there is a lot of ability there, and I think that if they choose to learn from what happened against Saunders, it could potentially be the best thing that's ever happened to him. I think if he'd have walked out there in that first round, one of those wild swinging shots that he was launching for about the first five rounds had taken Saunders clean out in the first round. Okay, we'd have thought it was spectacular, but there would have still been a lot of things missing ultimately as he stepped up through the ranks. I think at this stage against Saunders, he learned some very, very valuable lessons. But I think the concern, and I understand the concern, is just that whole... And I kind of got a sense of it when I was speaking to Ronnie Davis in Hove. I got a sense of it when I was watching Eubank Jr. and Eubank Jr. spar, and Eubank Sr. was kind of watching alongside and applauding very, very excitedly. But there was a sense that they believed that this guy, this Chris Eubank Jr. was so very, very good that he didn't need any kind of tactics. He didn't need any kind of advice. He would find a way, and that kind of train of thought was only it only got stronger watching the kind of chaotic scenes almost in the corner in the Saunders Eubank fight. In that, Ronnie Davis was kind of keeping quiet early on. Eubank Senior was also keeping quiet, but he was kind of prancing about and almost hoping that the fatherly bond, that he would be able to transmit what he was thinking and Eubank Jr. would pick it up. There didn't seem to be any kind of game plan in that fight. I suspect, and from what I've seen of Eubank Jr. since, although the absolute confidence remains, if you question him about that night and you question him about where you let six rounds go effectively against Billy Joe Saunders, he does say things like, I'll never make that mistake again. You do sense that even though he may not come out and admit that he needs help, you suspect that he sought it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also the interesting thing about that fight is it's, you know, Billy Joe was outboxing him for the first half of it, and in the second half, Eubank Jr. fell back on his sort of strength and physicality. So he showed he could fight, and he showed he was resilient, and he showed he was tough, but it wasn't a great stroke of genius. He just trundled forward as it was just straight ahead stuff.
Yeah.
Which showed he could fight, but you need, you know, tough isn't enough. You need more than that to be world class. And it also showed the areas where Billy Joe's a bit lacking, that sort of, you know, having enough pop to keep him off, not tiring. The sort of, you know, Eubank got himself into that fight on sort of strength and his conditioning.
Yeah.
So it also showed us sort of one of the areas that Billy Joe Saunders needs to work on.
Well, exactly. No, I thought it was a good fight, and I think what you say there in terms of, yeah, he did just keep. There didn't really seem to be any method to it. It's all well and good, kind of saying, look. And I remember being at the, I don't think it was the final pre-fight press conference, but it was certainly in the weeks leading up to it, and Eubank Jr. was just saying, yeah, I'll find a way to win. That's all well and good if you're fighting in the late 19th century and there's no kind of, you know, you could have potentially 50 rounds or 100 rounds to kind of catch up with your opponent, but when you've got a set number of rounds, that's not a foolproof plan.
No.
Okay, so we've been talking for quite a while. I know you've got to get off. You're going to the opening of a gym, aren't you? Where are you off to?
An amateur club is opening in London.
In London? Right.
I will find it.
Yeah, just around the corner, I'm sure.
These kind of things can't happen without me.
Okay, so look, before we go, it would be wrong to not mention the names Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Yet again, I think Steve Kim has tweeted something, hasn't he?
Well, it's not on until Steve Kim tweets it, or possibly Floyd Mayweather tweets it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're told that, well, we're not told actually, there's a few people out there that are saying that this weekend it's going to be announced.
I sense it in my bones.
I'm not positive, however you were positive that it was going to be announced during the Super Bowl.
I changed my mind at 10 p.m.
And you went to bed, or did you sit up and watch just in case?
Well, I watched till the half time just in case. But I don't regret that. It was a great show. Poor old Left Shark.
So, are we likely to see it this weekend?
Oh, totally.
It is getting.
I'm an optimist.
It's getting a little bit silly. I was optimistic. I believe that in Heroes and Villains last year, I think one of the questions that was posed was, will Mayweather and Pacquiao happen in 2015? I was the only one out of the team that said yes. And I was, at that moment, I was feeling that I was being perhaps a little bit over-optimistic. But I think sometimes in life you have to be optimistic. You have to expect the good things to happen. And every now and again, a few of those good things will happen. But I'm now kind of thinking that surely, after all, if it was going to happen now, after all these negotiations, would it not have been announced a while ago?
But my take on the silence is that it's a good thing, because they could easily have ruled it out by
True.
So the fact that things have gone a bit quiet is hopefully a sign that these still waters are running deep and something's happening.
It's something, yeah, and I think you just saying that has made me think about something else, because last time, for his fight in May last year, it was going to be either Marcus Maidana or Amir Khan, and before the announcement was made, Amir Khan, understandably, kind of made his feelings quite clear that he felt that he'd been let down and made a bit of a mug. So by the time that Floyd Mayweather made his announcement on social media, it wasn't a massive surprise. It was kind of Marcus Maidana or no one. So the fact that neither fighter has turned around and said, it's definitely not happening, I understand why you think that's positive.
So I think negotiations are hopefully ongoing. Fact that Bob Arum was giving a bit of a running commentary.
He's shut up as well, hasn't he?
I think that's which is probably a good sign, because I don't think, yeah, obviously we want a running commentary. We would like to know what's going on at every step of the way. But the fact that we're not getting much more is potentially a good sign that things are moving. And equally Floyd Mayweather sort of taping, putting a bit of a clip of him talking to Pacquiao, you know, up on social media, probably wasn't particularly helpful, and that was happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not happening, and neither is ruling it out. So, as an optimist, I can cling on to these thin strands of hope and hope that something is going on. But then I would settle for them fighting in September and both having high-level fights now to build towards that. So, for me, they can fight in September, Mayweather can fight Cotto, Pacquiao can fight Khan, both those fights in May. You know, hopefully the negotiations have progressed where they can be confident they can make it for September. We'll have a proviso
No.
You're right, mate. It's a great fight for 2016.
No. It just has to happen now. After the length of time that this has been going on, these, you know, apparent negotiations, and I'm not for one second suggesting that they've all been locked in a boardroom for the last 3 weeks. But this has been going on a while. It's clear that it has been being discussed by both parties for a while. If they don't come to an agreement for it to happen this time, I think there's absolutely no hope whatsoever. And quite frankly, for the last time, we should wash our hands with the whole thing if it doesn't happen in May this year.
I'm never letting go, Matt.
I've heard that about you, John. Exactly. I've heard that.
I'm like Leonardo. Oh wait, I was about to say I'm like Leonardo DiCaprio at the end of Titanic, but he does let go.
He does let go. He does. He does. Yeah, yeah. And I don't think you can ever forgive Kate Winslet for that.
Yeah, no.
There was enough room on that.
There
whatever
was.
It was. Door.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't even thought about this. Yeah. That is very selfish.
Yeah.
No, I'm like Sean Connery holding on to Indiana Jones at the end of. Oh wait, no. But he says, "Just let it go." Okay.
All right. Okay, that will do it for this week. Hopefully, next week we'll have some. Good news about Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. But what I will say is that we will be updating the website all over the weekend, if necessary, with all breaking news on that subject. So please do keep an eye on the website. There's always new stuff going up on a daily basis. If you haven't looked at our website for a while, please do. And thanks, as always, for listening. It is much appreciated, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Is that right, Matthew?